This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Welcome to the Military Times. My name is Mark Love, and our first article comes from Military Times Front News. Army Secretary Defense Driscoll tapped as acting head of ATF operations, dated April 9, 2025. Army Secretary Daniel Driscoll will serve as a temporary head of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives without giving up his military leadership role, a defense official confirmed Wednesday. The unusual move, which gives Driscoll the top post in two separate complex federal agencies, came after President Donald Trump opted to remove FBI Director Kash Patel from the acting director role in recent days. White House officials did not release information on why Patel was relieved or why Driscoll was selected for the extra post. Defense Department officials declined to comment on whether the new role will take away from Driscoll's focus on leading the Army. Driscoll, 38, was confirmed to the top Army job by the Senate just 43 days ago. He is a former senior advisor to Vice President J.D. Vance and spent 4 years in the Army, including a deployment to Iraq in 2009. As the temporary head of ATF, Driscoll will lead efforts within the Department of Justice to investigate federal offenses related to firearms use and sales, as well as illegal sales of explosives, alcohol, beverages, and tobacco products. White House officials under Trump have suggested merging the ATF with another agency, potentially the Drug Enforcement Administration, to cut back on bureaucracy and federal staffing. No specific plans have been outlined yet. Meanwhile, Defense Department leaders are conducting reviews of service civilian staffing and missions for possible budget cuts in the future. Unlike his predecessors in the White House, Trump has used his executive powers to double task a number of senior officials in temporary leadership roles. For example, Veteran Affairs Secretary Doug Collins was sworn in by the Senate for the leadership role, but is also serving as the interim head of the Office of Government Ethics and the Office of Special Counsel while the administration reorganizes both agencies. Outside advocates have warned that the multiple jobs could distract appointees from their primary duties and create confusion about command responsibilities within the affected agencies. In our next article, did the Trump administration move too quickly to commit to the F-47, dated April 9, 2025? An opinion. On March 21st, President Donald Trump announced that Boeing was being awarded the contract to develop the Next Generation Air Dominance Fighter, or NGAD, or NGAD, now called the F-47, a major commitment by the Trump administration. As outgoing Secretary of the Air Force in the Biden administration, I had the opportunity to make that decision, but I chose to defer it until after the presidential election. Why? At first glance, the decision to ensure the U.S. Air Force has the most capable manned fighter in the world doesn't seem to be a tough call. But Congress needs to look beyond the obvious appeal of this advanced aircraft and ask the Trump administration some hard questions. Is this the right airplane for our defense strategy? Is it affordable? Does it displace higher priorities? I deferred the NGAD decision because I didn't have those answers before I left the Department of the Air Force, and it's unclear whether the Trump administration has them now. I started the NGAD program in 2015 when I was Under Secretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics. At the time, I launched the Aerospace Innovation Initiative, or AII, to build experimental prototypes known as X-planes that would develop and test high-risk, high-payoff technologies for the next generation of fighters after the F-35, while also supporting competition and maintaining cutting-edge aircraft design teams in the defense industrial base. This program successfully produced the technologies that are the basis for the designs that competed to become the F-47. Following AII's success, the Air Force moved on to developing more detailed tactical designs with all the features and subsystems required to support the Air Force's chosen mission. When I returned to the Pentagon as Secretary of the Air Force in 2021, I found that the Air Force had decided to pursue a follow-on to the F-22, a fighter designed for man-penetrating counter-air or PCA missions. Such missions involve flying deep into enemy airspace and fighting against robust, state-of-the-art defenses. The PCA emphasis brought with it significant costs, tens of billions for development, and hundreds of millions per aircraft for production. These expenses limit the potential aircraft inventory to small numbers. We currently have fewer than 200 F-22s. These airplanes are precious, and we can't tolerate high losses in this fleet. We don't know what conflicts or war-fighting scenarios will drive the Trump administration's defense investments. PCA designs are based on the need to take the air superiority fight deep into heavily defended enemy territory. But we have to ask, Is this a sound planning scenario for nuclear powers like China or Russia? If the Trump administration's strategy emphasizes homeland security and defensive scenarios, wouldn't a lower cost design, more focused on defense counter-air, or DCA, make more sense? Would a multi-role next generation design like the F-35 make more sense? Would an aircraft designed to work with uncrewed tactical aircraft like the Air Force Uncrewed Collaborative Combat Aircraft make more sense? The decision to buy the F-47 needs to be the right choice for the future. This is the only new crew fighter aircraft the Air Force will likely pursue for a long time. Just before I left office, I authored a report for Congress and the Department of the Air Force that the U.S. would need in 2050. I discussed the strategic environment we could expect at the time and what the Air Force and Space Force would need to do to prepare. I predicted a transition to reliance on uncrewed aircraft that would most likely be controlled by crewed aircraft designed for that purpose, providing superior capabilities and putting fewer pilots at risk. The F-47 will be able to control uncrewed aircraft, but it isn't optimized for that function. Congress needs to ensure that the Trump administration has considered the relationship between F-47, the Trump defense strategy, and the overall future of the Air Force. Moreover, whether the F-47 will fit into the Trump administration's 2026 budget and future years program remains an open question. When the Air Force created its first draft 2026 budget and five-year program in 2024, we concluded we couldn't afford NGAD, no matter how capable and relevant it was. Congress needs to ask what has changed since then. Over the next 5 years, the F-47 program will require tens of billions of dollars in additional funding. At this point, with all the other demands on the Air Force budget, including recapitalizing two legs of the nuclear triad, it's unclear whether this administration or the next will be able to continue this program. Congress should demand to see the affordability analysis the Trump administration should have completed before awarding the contract. Congress should also consider whether the Trump administration's future year defense plan and budget will prioritize higher priority investments than the F-47. When I left the Pentagon, the Department of the Air Force had a list of unfunded strategic priorities that were higher priority than NGAD. At the top of the list were counter-space weapons and air-based defense. Neither of these is a direct Air Force responsibility, but both are critical to the success of the entire joint force. China is well on its way to fielding robust space-based targeting systems that threaten all of our land and sea-based forces. We must acquire counter-space systems at scale, or China will be able to target all of our assets at sea and on the ground with impunity and in real time. China also has an ever-expanding arsenal of sophisticated weapons ready to strike our bases in Pacific. Those bases are limited in numbers, not well defended, and each is subject to attack by literally hundreds of missiles of all types. Our new F-47 and all of our forward base aircraft will never get off the ground if we don't address these threats through substantial budget increases. Congress must demand that the Trump administration provide a national defense strategy with the 2026 budget and explain how the F-47 supports that strategy. The administration also needs to show that F-47 is affordable and that it hasn't come at the expense of higher priority needs. Congress must ensure that the Trump administration provides the needed support for the F-47 decision. Until then, the jury's out whether the F-47 contract should have been awarded. And in our next article, Air Force F-35A Frankenjet returns to the skies, dated April 9th, 2025. An F-35A Lightning II fighter jet, comprised of parts from two separate F-35A jets, is returning to full service after a years-long repair, according to the F-35 Joint Program Office. The office concocted the Frankenjet, which features the nose of the AF-27 grafted onto the AF-211, to maximize taxpayer dollars and resurrect an extra operational aircraft, a release from the office said. The scope and complexity of this project was an exemplary demonstration of overcoming barriers and achieving a greater tier of major aircraft repair capability for an advanced tactical fighter, said Thomas Barber, an F-35 Joint Program Office Major Mishap Repair Team engineer, in the release. The tinkering began in 2022 when the F-35 Joint Program Office collaborated with Lockheed Martin and a 388 Fighter Wing Maintenance Group to salvage two damaged jets. The AF-27 experienced an engine fire in 2014 at Eglin Air Force Base, Florida, while the AF-211 had a nose gear landing malfunction in 2020. Altogether, restoration took over 2 years and cost $11.7 million, nearly $3 million less than the expected amount. The jiggering of parts saved the Defense Department $63 million, according to the release. The Franken jet flew out of Hill Air Force Base, Utah for the first time on January 24th, on a trip to Lockheed Martin's facility in Fort Worth, Texas, where it underwent final maintenance. It officially returned to full service on March 26th and is currently assigned to the 4th Fighter Generation Squadron, 388th Fighter Wing. A testament to the process developed here is that the rebuilt aircraft's first flight was flown to the edges of the performance envelope, and it performed like it was a fresh from the initial production line, said Jeffrey Jensen, the F-35 variant lead. Hill Air Force Base, where the jet's rejuvenation process took place, has become a body shop for mangled jets, using the parts to train airmen and, when possible, giving the jets a second life through repairs. In 2020, mechanics at Hill reattached the wings of a damaged F-35A Lightning II, a feat completed with little precedent to rely on, and used this fuselage to train F-35 crew chiefs and maintainers in repairing combat damage, Military Times previously reported. In our next article, Army to recode 20,000 parachutist jobs in major airborne restructuring, dated April 9, 2025. The Army will recode nearly 20,000 paid parachutist positions in a major restructuring of its Air Force, of its airborne forces aimed at improving readiness, service officials said. The recoding means the positions will remain airborne billets, but soldiers will no longer be required to maintain jump status or receive jump pay. Over a five-month period beginning last September, two dozen Army organizations met to examine the service requirements for airborne operations and training. Lieutenant General Gregory Anderson, head of the 18th Airborne Corps, told the Army Times. Since 2006, the Army has kept 56,756 paid parachutist positions on its rolls, Anderson said. For reference, the entire force of Army parachutists that jumped into Normandy during the World War II was 13,000 troops. In recent years, limited aircraft availability, especially C-17s and C-130s, has contributed to an overall decline in the collective airborne proficiency, Anderson said. As a result, assets used to maintain the jump status of more than 56,000 positions has come at the expense of keeping the assault force, the combat troops, and immediate response missions at a high level of readiness, the three stars said. We started to assume risk with the high-end forces that have to be ready to go tonight, Anderson said. This is not about saving money. It's about getting readiness to where we need it. Below are the parachute position recodings by command. These figures are estimates by the U.S. Army and are not yet finalized. 9,000, Army Special Operations Command. 3,600, Army National Guard. 3,500, Army Forces Command. 1,900, Army Reserve. 1,000, Army Pacific. 850, Army Europe and Africa. Currently, to maintain jump status, a parachutist must jump 4 times each year. What ends up happening, we take fewer aircraft, same jump requirements, and units doing everything they can to achieve basic airborne currency, Anderson said. In many cases, they were not meeting even currency. The Pentagon requires the Army to produce 15,000 parachutists at ready at any time. As the organizations analyze this requirement, training needs, and the demands of maintaining the force from jiggers to jump masters, they had to ask tough questions, Anderson said. Are support battalions going to jump into a combat situation with the assault echelon, Anderson said, or would they come in later some other way? Army Chief of Staff General Randy George told Army Times in an email statement that the adjustments will prioritize training and resources where they are needed most. Too many positions were allocated outside of direct combat force. This was a drain on resources and we're fixing it. Soldiers in the affected billets will still be airborne trained, and if they transfer into an assault position, they will be retrained with a refresher course and put on paid jump status, Anderson said. These decisions help make our paratroopers more proficient by concentrating on those who could be jumping into combat, George said. And in our next article, what Marine Corps Aviation has in store over the next 5 years, dated April 9, 2025. National Harbor, Maryland. Over the next 5 years, Marine aviators should see more F-35s, an upgraded MV-22 Osprey fleet, a larger fleet of cargo aircraft, and data-enabled predictive aircraft maintenance. That's the vision Deputy Commandant for Aviation Lieutenant General Bradford Gehring shared Tuesday at the Navy League's annual Sea Airspace Exposition. So what does modernization look like in the Marine Corps? It's an all-5th-generation tactical air force of F-35s augmented by collaborative combat aircraft, Gehring said. It's a full fleet of CH-53K helicopters for the heavy mission lift mission. Gehring added that the MV-22 program will have finished its platform midlife upgrades over the remainder of the next 5-year budget cycle. Also involved in the Corps Aviation Wing will be its drone fleet of MQ-9 Reapers, which are flying today. Those will eventually see major payload and sensor upgrades, Gearing said. On the larger side of the aviation equation, the Corps expects to complete purchasing of the 95 total KC-130J Caldor planes it needs for its transport fleet. Two training squadrons and 9 operational squadrons are now flying the F-35 Lightning II jet, a fifth-generation fighter. Over the next 5 years, the Corps will build another 7 active-duty squadrons, which will be supplemented by 2 reserve squadrons. At the end of the F-35 transition, there will be 18 active squadrons, a dozen flying the F-35Bs, and 6 flying the F-35Cs. The 2 reserve squadrons will fly the C variant, which was built for aircraft carrier takeoff and landing. The B variant can conduct vertical takeoff and landing. Gearing said the Corps also wants to be able to maintain and close kill webs and all enemy air assets through an airborne command and control and aviation ground support structure that is scalable and can conduct expeditionary operations and work in a distributed aviation environment. In its aviation plan released in January, the Corps provided more details on its airborne assets. The Marines shifted their F-35 plans to buy more carrier-based F-35Cs and fewer short takeoff and vertical landing F-35Bs. The total number of Joint Strike Fighters the service plans to buy remains 420. The service will eventually fly 280 F-35Bs and 140 F-35Cs, more than doubling the number of F-35Cs included in the 2022 plan, which called for 353 F-35Bs and 67 F-35Cs. And in our next article, Army adjust tracker policy following fatal DC Black Hawk collision, dated April 8, 2025. The Army has made changes to how its helicopters use a safety system that broadcasts aircraft location and has reduced the number of flights over Washington following a collision with a passenger jet that killed 67 people, the head of Army Aviation told the Associated Press on Tuesday. Investigators are still determining why the Army helicopter and the American Airlines jet collided near Ronald Reagan National Airport on January 29th, but the Federal Aviation Administration has data showing an alarming number of close calls around the airport. The safety system, called ADSB, short for Automatic Dependent Surveillance Broadcast, has become a flashpoint as some have pointed to the likely lack of use by the Black Hawk helicopter that night as a potential cause of the crash. The ADSB out part of the system is designed to help air traffic controllers and nearby planes better track an aircraft's location with position updates every second. But it can also allow anyone, including a plane enthusiast on the ground, know precisely where a helicopter or plane is located. Army helicopters in the past have turned off the system for many missions because they were deemed sensitive. The Army's head of aviation, Brigadier General Matthew Brahman, said there now will be fewer flights with the ADSB out data turned off, and also fewer VIP flights. In the months since the crash, the Army has halted the vast majority of flights it was conducting for general officers rank 3 stars and above to ferry them from the Pentagon's helipad to regional locations. It has only resumed limited flights for the Defense Secretary, Deputy Defense Secretary, and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, while a limited number of other senior military officials can fly from Virginia's Fort Belvoir, Brahman said. The Army's 12th Battalion is one of the 20 agencies that used the low-altitude helicopter routes around Ronald Reagan National Airport. That includes the Department of Defense, individual military services, local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies, emergency medical services, the National Guard, Coast Guard, and others. Changes to ADS-B out policy. Before the collision, the Army was exempt from broadcasting ADS-B out data during sensitive missions, according to an August 2024 memo obtained by the American Press. Those missions could include ferrying a senior leader or training for an emergency where transmitting a landing location could expose sensitive tactical information on reaction plans. The Army still has that exemption, but it is making changes to how it flies so the exemption won't be used as often, Brahman said. In past training and evaluation flights, such as on the night of the crash, crews combined normal flight routes with practice landings at sensitive locations. That meant they had to fly with ADSB out switched off for the whole flight, according to the memo. Now crews are separating normal training and evaluation flights from flights that rehearse the classified continuity of government mission, Brahman said. That reduces the number of flights where ADSB out data will be turned off. If they're not going to one of those sensitive locations, it should be 100% on, Brahman said. It's assumed the three Army crew who were killed in the crash were flying with ADSB out turned off, but CRAS investigators have not concluded that yet, he said. The other part of the system, ADVS-N, pulls in location data from nearby planes and helicopters. Few Army aircraft had ADS-BN due to the cost and were not required to have it. The Army has now authorized the purchase of 1,600 ADS-BN systems for its helicopter fleet. Army says the helicopter's location was still known. Even if ADS-B out was off, the Black Hawk's transponder was in use and transmitting its position, Brahman said. The FAA says ADS-B out data is more precise than the radar data communicated by a transponder, which, depending on the mode in use, can shield some aircraft information. The night of the crash, the Black Hawk was transmitting in three transponder modes, A, C, and S, which combined gave the helicopter's identity, location, and altitude. There was no question where that aircraft was, Brahman said. There was no point during a flight where a jet and an airport control tower could not see the Black Hawk, he said. I think there's still a perception out there, I know there is, that the aircraft with ADS-B out in that segment around DCA were invisible, and that is so far from the truth, Brahman said. As a result of the crash, the FAA has permanently closed a route along the Potomac River that directly intersects the flight path for the runway where January's collision took place. In our next article, Air Force revokes four-day weekends for troops, dated April 9, 2025. The Air Force on Monday revoked a policy providing troops extra time off around holidays, saying the widespread leave, known as family days, hurt the department's ability to carry out its mission. The Air Force has in the past granted airmen and guardians those extra days off, usually in conjunction with a holiday that falls on a Thursday, Friday, or Monday. This gives troops a regular series of four-day weekends, roughly one a month, to spend as they wish. In a February 11th memo cracking down on civilian employees' use of family days and announcing a broader view of the policy, Acting Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Manpower Reserve Air Affairs, Gwendolyn DeFilippi, said these days recognize our team's contributions to the missions and our families, enduring support for our efforts. Meetings and scheduled activities are often minimized during such days, DeFilippi said then. But in an April 7th memo that leaked online, Acting Air Force Secretary Gary Ashworth said the more generous leave policy for troops won't work with the military's new focus on sharpening its effectiveness. The Department of the Air Force is focused on restoring lethality and readiness to our force, Ashworth said in a memo, first posted Tuesday by the unofficial Air Force Airman NCO, Senior NCO Facebook page. Providing a blanket designation of past days, often called family days, to align with all 11 federal holidays throughout the year does not support our ability to execute the mission with excellence while maintaining our competitive advantage. An Air Force official confirmed the memo is genuine. Ashworth advised commanders across the services to review their leave policies to ensure they align with readiness. Leaders are allowed to grant passes to service members at their discretion, Ashworth said, when that time off doesn't harm operational missions and warfighting requirements. Reaction to the memo on the Airman NCO, Senior NCO Facebook page was mixed. Some commenters said certain key airmen, such as security forces, rarely received extra days off and that the mission needs to come first. Others doubted canceling this time off would measurably improve lethality and readiness and said it would harm morale and retention. This is disappointing, one commenter said. Big Air Force will mandate that you show up and do busy work for 8 to 12 hours a day after Christmas and then wonder why you didn't want to reenlist. In our next article, back to 13 Marine squads and a new company for infantry battalions, dated April 8, 2025. The 13 Marine squad is back. The Corps is creating a new company within the infantry battalion to meet its modern warfighting needs. Commandant General Eric Smith announced those changes Monday at the Navy League's annual Sea, Air, and Space Exposition. The fighting unit has grown to 15 Marines during infantry battalion experiments in recent years. That included adding an assistant squad leader and a squad systems operator to manage the many sensing and firing platforms being added to the unit's arsenal. Dropping back to the 13 Marine configuration still gives Marines more personnel than a standard 9-soldier U.S. Army squad. It also returns the squad to its previous size, but instead with a sergeant rather than a staff sergeant in charge of 3 fire teams and an organic precision fire specialist in the ranks. The infantry battalion will also see the formation of a reconnaissance and fires company outside the headquarters and service company ranks. That new company will include the battalion's 81mm mortars, organic precision fires, such as drones and a scout platoon for reconnaissance assets, Smith said. The decision was made this past week, the commandant said, when the Corps concluded phase one of its infantry battalion experiments in 2023. It reduced the size of the infantry battalion from 965 Marines to 811 and added new technologies for sensing, striking, and communication and power generation. Each of the battalion's three rifle companies hold individual operations, signal, logistics, electronic warfare, and medical sections. Recent plans also called for a Navy corpsman available for each squad. The Marine Corps first unveiled the 15 Marine configuration in 2018. Prior to that, the service had used the 13 Marine squad model since at least the 1950s, with three fire teams or four Marines and a squad leader. In 2018, then Commandant General Robert Naylor initially announced that he would cut the squad from 13 to 12. That changed after his own experiments recommended otherwise. The 3rd Battalion, 5th Marine Regiment, had conducted 6 months of experimentation with new configurations and gear. Following that work, an article published in a professional journal, Marine Corps Gazette, recommended a 15 Marine squad. Iran uses an even larger formation, a 16-soldier squad with a squad leader, sniper, a 2-soldier rocket team, and 3 fire teams of 4 soldiers, all with automatic rifles, according to infantry building blocks published in a 2018 issue of Military Review. The same article described China's dismounted infantry squads as formations of 9 to 10 soldiers devoted to anti-armor missions. Before the Ukraine war, Russia had centered even their dismounted squads around the use of either a BMP, infantry fighting vehicle, which is tracked, or a BTR, wheeled armor personal carrier, according to the Russian Way of War, published by U.S. Army University Press. And in case you're just now joining us, you're listening to Military Times. And in our next article, Hegseth vows U.S. will take back Panama Canal from Chinese influence, dated April 9, 2025. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth said the United States military would prevent China's government from increasing its sway over the Panama Canal, as the President Donald Trump says America is reclaiming control of the waterway. Together, we are going to take back the canal from China's influence, Hegseth said. The secretary spoke Tuesday from a Panamanian Navy pier renovated with $5 million funding from the U.S. Army. The backdrop, a towering bridge with cargo ships loitering in the distance, was itself a sign of Hegseth's priorities. The Trump administration has promised a new focus on the Western Hemisphere, enforced in large part through the military, in his first 3 months. Hegseth has sent around 7,500 more active-duty troops to the U.S. southwest border and deployed 2 Navy destroyers to patrol the country's coast in a show of force. He's also used military aircraft to deport migrants from the U.S., including some to Panama. Hegseth's visit shows the approach extending farther beyond American borders, adding gentler tone from the Trump administration. On a trip, he promised to increase joint exercises with Panama, rotate more American troops into the country, and to renovate a former U.S. military jungle school now in disrepair. Well, I'm afraid this is all the time we have for now. I'd like to thank you for joining us for Military Times. My name is Mark Love, and I hope that you'll join us next time.